Titans of Text.
Welcome, authors, implementers, builders, players, one and all, to the Titans of Text podcast. We're your hosts, Eric Ostrich.
And Danny Austerity Nissenfeld.
And we have with us today Jason McIntosh, the president of the Interactive Fiction Technology Foundation, and Jacqueline Ashwell, the chair of the IFTF's annual competition, IFComp. Welcome to you both.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
So we usually start off by asking the guests to sell us on whatever they're in charge of, normally a MUD, but sometimes it's whatever project they might be working on. So this might be a bit of a weight to carry, but I'd like you to sell the audience on interactive fiction itself. Why should anyone in these modern times be paying mind to IF, whether it has graphics or not?
Yeah, no, I think the thing that I love most about interactive fiction is that anything you can imagine and describe, you can create. And you can invite other people to come explore those imaginings you've had. So, you know, I've been a fan of interactive fiction and since I was about 8 years old. And some of my really, it sounds odd, but real formative memories are of exploring interactive fiction worlds. It's how I learned to type. It's how I picked up a ton of weird vocabulary when I was a kid. And, you know, now these days, I have the joy of also being on the author side of it and having the challenge of trying to anticipate everything a player might want to do in the worlds that I create and try to code in a response for everything. And it's just fun on all sides. And now I've been doing competitions, organizing them for a number of years. And I love doing that because it encourages other people to create.
I've been enjoying text-based games since I myself was a kid in the 1980s, and my appreciation for them has been growing and changing as the medium itself has been. And I think playing off on one of the things that Jacqueline was just saying is the accessibility of interactive fiction is very important to me, not just in playing it, but also in creating it, such that with a very well-done IF game, if you can read and if you can do basic interactions with a computer or a computing device, then you can appreciate one of these games. And similarly, and this becomes more true with the passage of time and with the creation of new and a larger variety of creation tools, anybody who can write and anybody willing to learn, you know, there's always going to be a little bit of coding involved. But to make a very basic work of interactive fiction, you have to be able to write and you have to have, you know, the will to try to make an interactive experience of some kind, and the tools will meet you there and you'll be able to make something and you can take it from there and be able to share that with people. That's certainly also true with other kinds of video game systems, not necessarily text-based, but that's true with text systems in a way that I think your audience of MUD fans would be able to appreciate. It's rather similar to the experience of logging into a MUD and exploring what people have built there and then learning, oh, I can just type at dig and make rooms of my own. And now I can make objects and link them together. It can be similar to that.
Yeah. And I think what's been even more kind of fun lately is that there've been a lot of group projects that have happened, and Cranye Manor happened last year. It linked together 80 authors, some of whom I don't think had really written any interactive fiction before. But the organizers of that were Jenny and Ryan encouraged people who had no background in coding to just, if you had an idea, you could write it down, they'd code it for you. They, you know, so it's just this, it's an accessible medium. And I think it's becoming more and more of an inclusive community as well.
Yeah, community is a big part of it. And just to expand on what Jacqueline was just saying, she was talking about, how did you pronounce it just now?
Cranye Manor is my pronunciation.
Yeah, it's Cranye. Some people say Cragney. This is a project led by Jenny Polodna and Ryan Veter last year, and it is spelled C-R-A-G-N-E, Manor, as in a manor house. And it was a celebration of the 20th anniversary of Michael Gentry's Anchorhead, which was an amazing Lovecraftian text adventure game, which has a special, itself has a special edition on sale on Steam. And, but there was a fan project that these two people put together, which brought together dozens and dozens of people to create this amazing, intentionally ramshackle game where you explore this space and with each room was made by a different person or team of people. and they all connect together through some miracle. That's an excellent example of a recent amazing community effort that is available only through the medium of text games. And you can trace the lineage of this wonderful, weird thing all the way back to the first text games of the 1970s and 80s, which again is something of interest to the Mud Crowd, I think.
So you, Jason, you founded the IFTF. Is that correct?
I am one of its five co-founders, yes.
So how did the impetus to make the IFTF come to be? What was the reason for being?
The casus belli?
Yes.
I can give you the most literal answer because it's the most fun story. So in 2013, Stephen Grenade had been running the annual interactive fiction competition for 13 years. I think he was its third organizer. It had started in 1995. And knowing that, so I had been a previous entrant in it myself, and I had, you know, like a lot of people who were active in that community, had made various mutterings about some changes I'd like to see. And he was thinking of passing it along to somebody else. So he approached me and said, do you know anybody who would be interested in taking over IFComp? And I said, yes, I will. Thank you, Stephen. So I spent much of 2014 looking to sort of revitalize and re-examine IFComp and take all the assumptions that it took from the 90s about like what an IF game is. For example, at the time, Interactive Fiction Piece was specifically a parser-based game in the style of like an old Infocom game. But that had expanded and changed quite a bit in the years since then, particularly in latter years with the development of Twine and the ease and accessibility of creating hypertext-based fiction. So while I was in the process of building a team to help with my own organization of IFComp, Stephen, who was, you know, instrumental in helping with this transition process, suggested that I speak to another friend of ours in the community, Flourish Clank, who is very active in the fanfiction community and has a lot of knowledge about copyright law as it applies to fanfiction, because one of the thorns in the side of IFComp for a long time was its relationship with copyrighted works and how welcoming it should be to fanfiction. So I talked to Flourish, and Flourish said, I know a lawyer who is an expert in this. You should talk to her. So I talked to this lawyer, and the lawyer said, tell me about this competition. And I did. And she said, okay, hang on. Oh, this is a loose organization that's been running. This is an arts event that's been running annually for 20 years. And has no legal organization at all. And it has no way to collect funds from the community. Do I understand that right? And I was like, yes. And she said, you really need to make a nonprofit around this. And I said, okay, we'll get back to you. That put a seed in my mind about, maybe this deserves a little more organization. And then a little later in the year, one of the longstanding traditions of IFComp is its prize pool, which continues to this day. And this allows members of the community to put up prizes of various sorts that get awarded to authors at the end. And they have been things from like snack baskets to expertise, like I will copy edit some work of yours, or I will make a short musical composition based on your game. And sometimes people donate money. And that year in particular, a lot of people wanted to donate like very large amounts of money to the extent that I was a little concerned that this would be not really in the spirit of the prize pool, which is just sort of like nice little tokens. And someone else on the IFComp committee at that time in 2014 said, you know, it's almost as if people want to give money to interactive fiction itself, but there's just no way to do it. And I said, okay, fine, I'll make a nonprofit. So that's what happened. That's basically the spark that started it, was acknowledging that this community, which had been made of many disparate volunteer projects, IFComp being only one of them, that had been operating in this sort of wonderful Sargasso Sea across the internet, around the world for the last 20 years, really, it felt like it was time for them to come together in some official legal way that would be able to use some sort of legal framework in order to make them more organized and to make it better funded and to make sure that it's preserved and kept into the future, this art form that we all cared very much about. So that was basically where IFTF got its start. And from there, I convinced four friends from the Boston-based IF community, where I was active at the time, and also Chris Klimas, who is the inventor of Twine and who we knew from the community, to become its co-founders and its first board. And that all happened starting in 2015. We launched in 2016, and we've been active since.
So is that how the IFTF became the stewards of Twine, essentially? I mean, he was one of the founders, so I guess that makes a legal sense.
Yeah, correct. Of course, you know, Chris would be the best one to describe this, but if I can speak for him, he was thinking about doing something like this anyway. And he was very open with his concern about, he wanted Twine, which is a very successful free and open source project, to not be tied to him personally. And he wanted it to basically outlive him, to put it one way. And that meant making some sort of legal structure that was greater than his own person. So this was very much on his mind when we approached him and said, what would you think about joining this community or this nonprofit, of which we would invite Twine to be a major program of? So that was just, as far as we were all concerned, very good timing, yes.
How did you come to be a part of the IFTF, Jacqueline?
Well, it's interesting to hear the story about how Stephen went to Jason and said, do you know anybody who might want to run this? And Jason was like, yes, please. Because there was a similar but different thing that happened for me. And that is, this will be interesting to tell this story with Jason listening, and then he can like give his side of it. I had been running a competition for about 10 years called the Intro Comp. And it was similar but different, much smaller competition that encouraged predominantly new artists, new authors, to just write the beginning of something and see if people liked it. So you didn't have to write a whole game. You could just write like the first scene or whatever. But it meant that I'd been running an interactive fiction competition of a different sort for a while. And I think Jason was looking to take on a different role in the interactive fiction competition. And probably it had, I'm guessing, had a lot to do with running the IFTF. But yeah, he approached me and said some people had been discussing who might be a good steward, the next steward of the competition, and that my name had come up and would I be interested. And after I picked myself up off the floor and got over, I guess, a little bit of imposter syndrome, I started thinking about it more. And like Jason, I had had a lot of ideas about things related to the community. And I knew that this was a way that I could have an impact and help move things forward and help keep them thriving. So Jason, what's your memory of that conversation?
As far as I'm concerned, that is accurate from my point of view. So yeah, Jacqueline has been the organizer of the competition since 2018, I believe, and was sort of vice organizer in 2017, yeah. Which was a transitional year. So I was the organizer from 2014 through 2017, and Jack's been organizing it since last year. And I remain on the team as its tech coordinator, insofar as I'm the person who coded up the whole web application that is currently running at ifcomp.org. And one of the conditions for Jacqueline taking on the organizer role is that she would not be stuck with having to run this website. So that continues to be my albatross to wear. But everything else is on her plate, and she's been doing a fantastic job, if I may.
Thank you. It's actually not just my plate. I spin all the plates, but that's kind of one of the joys of moving from the intro comp, where it was all me and I didn't have a legal structure or basis or anything like that, and the prize money came out of my bank account, to working with IFComp. And, you know, suddenly there's this amazing team of volunteers. Jason has a team that runs the web application, but I've also got a lot of other help in terms of people checking all of our entries to make sure none of them give your computer a virus or violate copyright law or any of our other rules, and somebody else that helps with prize distribution and somebody else that helps with fundraising. And it's just, it is definitely a group effort.
And IntroComp is still an active concern.
It is. Yeah. So Zaliver Nelson fed on, I approached him when you approached me. I thought, well, I can't run two competitions, so I've got to give this one away. And he has been doing a great job and has taken that to new levels as I knew who would. So yeah, very much still a thing. It, this kind of sparks the idea that I don't know what the segue is here, but there's sort of a seasonality to interactive fiction these days where the dates kind of shift around a little bit for some of the competitions, but we just wrapped up the interactive fiction competition. And so the results are on our website. We finished up in mid-November. You can watch the award ceremony on our YouTube channel. You can like go play 80 something games that were in the competition and see how they all ranked out. Next will be the Zizzy's season. And that's sort of the Grammys of interactive fiction where we look at all the games that came out in 2019, and there's two rounds of voting to first nominate games, and then people play those final nominees and decide which are the best games in various categories, like, oh, best setting, best overall story, best protagonist, things like that. Then we've got the spring thing, which, boy, I should have thought about this before I went in to explain them all. The spring thing is sort of the cousin of the interactive fiction competition. It came about, I believe, because people wanted to be able to explore longer works of interactive fiction and just have some fewer constraints, I guess, fewer rules and more room to just stretch. And so Spring Thing comes out in the spring, and then Intro Comp usually hits in the summer. So yeah, the seasons of interactive fiction.
I'm a big fan of Spring Thing. That started out as by Adam Kadre, I think in the late 90s, as specifically just an antipode, if you will, to IF Comp and just being like, well, you don't have to wait a whole year now. You just have to wait 6 months and you get another competition. Yeah. And Aaron Reed has been running it more recently, and he basically turned it into like an anti-competition in the best sense of the word, in that he changed the focus of it less from ranking and competition and voting and giving things a numeric rank, which IFCOM still does, and more just an encouragement and just making it more of a festival in encouraging people to enter in works of any kind. And, you know, there's like, it's sort of like a state fair, and like a few works that get a lot of positive attention get some ribbons, but it doesn't make everyone stand into a line. It doesn't put them into a giant ranking. So it's a different way to encourage and celebrate new work, which I think works really well. So the competition and the spring thing, which is not a competition in the same sense, complement each other very well in the annual cycle.
That's really cool to hear about all the different competitions going on. But yeah, okay. So next question. So what did you both of you think about the public release of the ZILs, or the Zork Interpretation Language? I don't know what that expands to. But yeah, earlier this year.
I always love to see that these technologies that have their roots, they have their roots right at the very beginning of making a computer do something fun and interactive. And all of the games you play today, whether it's something on your PlayStation or on your phone or coming through a direct lineage of the technology itself, so that you still have people hacking on these original creation tools and these original machine languages. I just love to see that all of that someone is still keeping those ovens warm and someone is still keeping them active concerns. But I have not paid close attention to that otherwise, other than just being a general fan of the fact that people are still doing that.
Yeah, I'd say that's me as well.
So you guys have a convention, Neuroscope. The IFTF runs that, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. The very first Neuroscope happened last year in Cambridge, Massachusetts, on the MIT campus. And I'm going to have to look at our own blog.
The next one's in May, I know, because and it's in somewhere close to me. it's in Illinois.
Yep, it's at the University at Urbana.
So I'm besides the fact that I'm absolutely jealous of the name. It's a beautiful name for a narrative game convention. How did last year's Neuroscope go, and what does the IFTF do to foster community among IF fans and IF authors?
How did it go? It was a smashing success. It's the first time we had run a convention, so we didn't know what to expect. It was interesting in that initially we expected around 500 people to come based on our experiences attending similar events and independent game events in the Boston area. The attendance ended up being half of that, so we tempered our preparations appropriately. And then I don't suppose either of you attended that.
I did not. I was not aware of it, and it would have been outside of my travel range.
I think it happened before okay. I found out about it.
Jack, you were you?
I was not. No, this has been a really busy year, but I'm hopeful for next year.
So I am the sole attendee of it. So therefore, I you will have to go by my word, but I will say that it was an amazing time. And that's my summary of that. It was the sort of thing where we went into it and we're like, well, let's try this. And if it works, if it seems to work pretty good, maybe we'll do it again next year. And by, I would say, the halfway point, we were all 100% convinced that we would absolutely be doing this again the following year. It was a 2-day event. It was at MIT, like I said. I was lucky enough to be able to attend and go to many of the presentations, several of which are online and on YouTube. Yeah, it was just fantastic and amazing. We had so many amazing speakers. It was great to see the community being able to come together and share stories and ideas in a way that being in the same space can really help with. And yeah, I'm just really proud as the president of IFTF to see this program come together. And as a side note, something I really enjoy mentioning about IFTF is that I know that it is becoming more successful as a nonprofit because I myself, its president and co-founder, had absolutely nothing to do with running Neuroscope. Like I was able to just like ride along and then show up and say hello to everybody at the beginning and then sit down again. But the Neuroscope program is one of several programs in IFTF that is essentially independent. Like the board has veto power and ultimate oversight of all the different programs in the way that is typical to American nonprofits. But otherwise, they have their own charter, they have their own budget, and they do their own thing. And boy, did they do their own thing last year. And I look forward very much to them doing their own thing again next year.
So you mentioned the whole point of essentially, they're subsidiaries. They have their own charter. They have their own budget. So if you're donating to IFTF itself, does that money get distributed among the chartered pieces of it? Or is that solely used for what you guys need to use it for?
That is a super good question. And again, I am not the best person to answer that. But I believe, you know what? I'm going to hit our own donate button right now and see what happens. Because I know that this is one of those things that our treasurer fine tunes as time goes on. So I know that as far as I know, we do have a general fund, and that is what you were describing in the latter case, which is that just goes into our fund for spending wherever that money is needed. When you do donate, you can earmark. There is space for a note to say, like, I would like this to be applied to Neuroscope specifically, or I would like this to be applied to Twine specifically. And if you do add that note, then we will earmark that money and say like, okay, this is for that. But otherwise, and this is the case for most donations, it goes into our general fund and we allocate that money as needed.
Sounds good to me. It's kind of like, it reminds me of the way Humble Bundle does their thing where you choose, you know, the split between the people that wrote the games, the charity, that kind of stuff. That giving people that kind of control is I think very important, especially to building trust with people with their money.
Yeah, and this is one of those areas where, you know, if I sounded uncertain at the beginning, it does speak to the fact that we're still a baby nonprofit, and in things like making it easier to donate, making it more clear to which program you need to, you the donor wish to apply money to. I mean, these are all things that we are learning as we go as an organization. And I hope improving as time goes on.
I've got one question here, and this might be more for Jason than overall. Of course, on the Titans, we mostly cover MUDs, and I imagine most of our audience is into MUDs. There's probably a little bit of people we've picked up here and there. And I have been stalking you a bit on Twitter, Jason. And at some point you were tweeting about IF MUD. And, you know, I'd be hard pressed to call most of what we had as MUDs in the 90s as interactive fiction. It was definitely interactive. There wasn't a whole lot of fiction in the hack and slash games that gave birth to, of course, you know, the EverQuest and the World of Warcrafts and the RuneScapes. But a good number of MUDs have a lot of story writing and a lot of role-playing these days. So my question to you, Jason, is where are the MUDs in the IFTF? Where's our representation, huh?
Here's my answer to that. I would invite you, all the Mud fans, to show up and self-represent at our forums at intifiction.org, which is an IFTIF program that is a discourse-based public forum for discussing all things IF. If a contingent of Mud fans shows up and wishes to work with the interactive fiction community, we would very much welcome that. And I would also point out the existence of IF Mud.
Exactly. That's where I was going to go.
Did you want to speak about that, John?
We've got IF Mud goes back, God, I don't know, to at least 1995, right? I mean, that's kind of, I'd have to go back and look, but I've been on it since 2002 and have made some of my dearest lifelong friends, up to and including my husband, off of the interactive fiction Mud. It's a different type of Mud. It's we do have some Mudders who log in because they just randomly come across it. And then they're like, well, where's the roguelike battling stuff? And we're like, yeah, we're more of a narrative type of Mud. But there are entire sections that people have written with quests and things like that. Although mostly it's just a place where we hang out and talk about interactive fiction and just the world in general. But IF Mud, it doesn't have a legal structure and background, similar to the conversation that we were having earlier. But it is supported by the interactive fiction community. There's one person who like runs the server and another person who does a lot of the hosting. And we use Patreon to make sure that those folks are getting what they need to be able to keep the server and all of that going. So I think it's mostly that it's been running nicely on its own, kind of on autopilot for a long time. And so IFTF, there's just never been a conversation about IFTF helping to support it because it's doing okay. But if that time ever came, I'm sure that I can't speak for the board or the president, but I'm sure if that was ever needed, it'd be a thing that would be explored.
So I myself haven't played too much interactive fiction. Like, what's a good way to find the first game that I should try out? Or is there any like specific recommendations that I should like go for?
I know that that one answer that is near and dear to both my heart and Jacqueline's is you can always go to the Interactive Fiction Competition website at ifcomp.org and browse the list of recent competition entries and recent competition winners as well. Each results page, which there's a results page that goes all the way back to the beginning of the comp in 1995, and each one has a link to that game's entry on the IFDB, which is the interactive fiction database website run by MJR, Mike Roberts. And that'll list some games that that are sort of chosen by the community as some of the best works of IF available. Going back to my own roots in the Boston-based IF scene, there is the Boston-based IF community is called the People's Republic of Interactive Fiction. Their website is pr-if.org. And if you go to their website, there's a big red play button, which links to some starter games that the community chose as good introductions to IF that you can play right in your web browser. I would note that this is a list that was constructed at the start of the current decade. So it's all parser-based IF. It's sort of before Twine-based games showed up, which is a whole different galaxy of wonderful interactive fiction games. But that gives you a good survey of parser-based IF that dates from the late 70s to, circa 2010, if you're looking for historical to semi-recent work. Finally, I would point to other podcasts that cover interactive fiction. And one that comes to mind is The Short Game, which is about short video games. So it's not just about IF, but they do cover IF Comp every year, and they have a few episodes about that. And that's one of their annual events that I myself enjoy listening to. They will also cover interesting IF games from time to time there. That's just three sources. There's many more besides that, but I guess it would come down to find some games that the community has already picked out as gems and start there.
And, you know, another really great way for people who have never played interactive fiction before to just kind of come to dip a toe in the water, especially if they're into MUDs, is I host a weekly gaming group. It's on Sunday mornings. Well, it's Sunday morning in Hawaii where I'm at. I believe we're at 2 p.m. Eastern. And basically, it's a group of people that get together and play a work of interactive fiction every Sunday. So if you don't know how to play, it's cool because there's other people there who can show you how. I love it because it's forced me to play games that otherwise I might not pick up. And thus, like I play a lot more sci-fi and have explored a lot of good games because I play with this group. So yeah, come join us.
So you guys have Narrascope, of course, a convention coming up in May. You have many competitions. Is there anything else on the horizon for the foundation?
Good question. So one of the things that we're working on right now, like I said, in our role as a baby org that's trying to figure out how a real grown-up nonprofit works is actually having an annual calendar and sticking to that. So we're in the process of building that right now and like figuring out which things happen cyclically for us. So this is a question that we're asking ourselves right now. So it's funny you'd ask that. Obviously, the things that come to mind as far as what's on the calendar next are the very ones that you just mentioned. There's the competition and competition-like event schedules that Jacqueline mentioned. So as she mentioned, IF Comp 2019 just wrapped for the year, but that means that the Zizzy Awards will be coming around, and then Spring Thing, and then Intro Comp. I should note that these are not IFTF programs. These are all, independent community things, but they are certainly IFTF adjacent insofar as IFTF is a member of the IF community. As far as things that are IFTF itself, I'm going to jog my own memory by going to our website, which I suppose I can plug at iftechfoundation.org. And I'm going to click on current and past programs and look at, let's see, competition. Yes, that certainly is annual. That is, yeah, that was more of a one-time thing. That was actually our first and so far only ad hoc committee rather than a standing one. But that's what Jacqueline's referring to is that was one of our launch programs, which was an investigation into the accessibility with the capital A of interactive fiction for players with disabilities. That is that was a project that a lot of people worked on, and I had the privilege of being its chair for its final year and the author of its report. And you can find that linked from our programs page. And that was basically a report to the community of recommendations to make text-based games more accessible. And I would certainly be thrilled to hear what the MUD community, in fact, thinks about this. Because when I talk about IF, I'm thinking of like, well, Twine, and like our focuses on this, just to keep it in scope, was games made with Twine and games made with Inform, which is one of the more popular parser-based tools. If the MUD playing and the MUD construction community wanted to weigh in on this report, I would frankly be thrilled to hear that.
We definitely have a number of MUDs and people that run MUDs that are very interested in especially visually impaired accessibility. We did an episode of, I think it was early on, what was it, our sixth or seventh episode, about accessibility with a MUD staffer and one of the players that is visually impaired. Genesis MUD or is it Materia Magica that attends a visually impaired conference? Well, not the conference isn't visually impaired, but it's a conference for visually impaired people and accessibility and, you know, tech and other things that they use to improve their lives and allow them to live in modern society. But it is a big concern. When we interviewed Richard Bartle and asked him, how do we get more people into MUDs? off-cuff answers was, well, go find some blind people because, you know, a MUD is for blind people. His irascibility there of the way he talks. But yes, it's definitely a big thing for us. And we're specifically us with the Titans, we're planning on doing a round table at some point with more than two people, like four or five other guests, where we specifically discuss ways to make MUDs more accessible to the visually impaired community?
In that case, I just reminded myself of my own URL. So our report is at accessibility.iftechfoundation.org. And that is the entire results of our findings, including the games that were created for testing, the survey results from the 36 people, players with disabilities who played these games and reported on their experiences, and the names of the community members, including players with disabilities who were on the committee that developed this report themselves. So yeah, I would encourage listeners of this podcast interested in this topic to look that up and feel free to give us feedback or follow up, because this is a report, but it's a report that in order to be meaningful depends on follow up work. And I invite further conversation on this.
All right. Thank you, Jason and Jacqueline, for being on Titans of Text.
Well, thank you very much for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a lot of fun.